Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and I am broadcasting to you from, well, a moderately cold environment of 23 degrees in Fairbanks, Alaska. I'm inside, though. That's outside. We've got a wonderful guest today and a subject matter that has been just loved by millions around the world. And what is that subject matter? It's Ripley's Believe It or Not. It seems like they can come out with books that are just absolutely amazing to look at. The facts, the information, the details are mind-boggling. And in today's environment, well, they're able to record things that you would never have even believed were possible. And we are talking with Edward Meyer. And Edward, you have been involved with Ripley's for how long?
Almost 34 years. Longer than Mr. Ripley was, and Mr. Ripley was a real man, but died in 1949, and we try very hard to keep his memory and legacy going, and for the last 34 years, I've been the one acquiring the exhibits for our 31 museums in 10 countries, and one of the editors of our book program, and our new book is called Strikingly True.
Oh, and the book is amazing. They're all amazing. And I look at the facts and the information and the details in there, and I go, can this really be possible? But of course it is, because it's all documented.
Because it's all Ripley's.
Yes, it's all Ripley's. And I have to tell you, I've been in the Ripley's Museum in San Francisco and also the one in New York. And the one
in New York
just blew me away, because it was sort of like the Energizer Bunny. It kept going on and going on and going on and going on.
It is our second biggest. The one in London's even bigger. But, yeah, New York is, at least three times the size of San Francisco. So, yeah, much bigger show.
It's amazing. And the information you've got in there is just phenomenal. Now, as you said, you've been in charge of exhibits and archives. How in the world did you get linked up with Ripley's to begin with? I mean, 34 years with this organization and this environment, which always is going to have a surprise around the corner.
Every day, every day.
How did you get started in this?
Well, I went to college, University of Toronto. Ripley's is a Canadian-owned company, and I'm a Canadian citizen living in Orlando, Florida currently, but the day I finished my college education, I went to school to be a librarian. I took a summer job with a company called Ripley International. When I applied, I didn't even know it was Ripley's, believe it or not. And the job was, you know, sort of the dawn of the computer age, to computer catalog their cartoon collection, which at that point was roughly 50 years in the making. Robert Ripley started drawing in 1918, and this was 1978. So 60 years, I guess that is. And I spent the summer doing what they were paying me to do, and at the end of the summer I said, you know, you guys are ridiculous. This won't go away. This needs to be a full-time job. And they sort of looked at me and thought maybe I was, you know, crazy. But about a month later, they called me and said, hey, would you like that full-time job we talked about? And I've been here ever since.
Well, I can say this about Ripley's. You're never, ever going to be bored. Let me ask you a question.
I get the world's best mail, and every day on the job is totally different than the one before.
That I believe. How do you go about verifying information? Because I know people will send all kinds of stuff, and with today's technology, so many things could be made up, fabricated in some way or another. How do you verify all of this?
Well, homework is the real answer, the short answer. It depends what we're talking about. I mean, for what I think is one of our most amazing pieces in the entire collection, a full-size two-trunked African elephant. We've got photo documentation, and then we did DNA samples on the trunks to make sure no one had just stuck one on. We do carbon dating. We talk to experts in the field. We, want notarized commentary from, people that aren't involved in the story. Mm-hmm. We do whatever is necessary, because not just for our books, but, our TV shows, our museums, our original newspaper column is still being run 93 years later. But if our name's on it, you can believe that it's true, and we've done our work, and we're proud to stand behind it.
Well, I have to say, I went through the book, and I had to pick out a few goodies that really pushed my buttons to a degree. This one is a very lighthearted one, but it just tickled me no end. I'm up here in Alaska anyway, and you have something titled Watch the Beardie, and Charles Earnshaw of Anchorage has his Beards of a Feather facial hair sculpture, and it was demonstrated at the 2010 U.S. National Beard and Mustache Championship in Bend, Oregon. I didn't even know they had this kind of competition.
Well, it's that's a pretty big one. It's been going for many years, and it's an annual event. So there's the ability to rerun it every couple years in our books. But the beards are always amazing. Big, huge, long mustaches shaped with things in them, whatever it takes to make their beard better than the next guy's.
And that's what he did. He put birds in it. He's got twigs. He's got all kinds of things. It's an amazing photograph. Today, it is very common to see young men and women, and even older men and women, tattooed. And in this edition, you have a special section on tattooed ladies. And some of this involves...
It's not where I thought you were going, but that's true, too.
Where did you think I was going?
Well, right up early in the book, we got Eric Sprague, the Lizard Man, one of the world's most unusual people, who has tattooed his entire body green scales, got Teflon implants above his eyes, has sharpened his teeth like fangs, and even forked his tongue.
Yeah.
But his entire body, green scale tattoo pattern, so that he looks like a giant six foot lizard. And what we've shown here on page 8 early in the book is how our art department made a lifelike wax figure of him. And we show him beside the wax figure, and it's pretty tough to tell which is which.
Oh, I can't imagine anybody doing something like that.
No, it's pretty horrific. Now, the tattooed ladies, they're all turn of the 20th century, sideshow circus performers. And, at that stage of the game, it wasn't too common for anybody to have two tattoos, but very uncommon for women. And, it was a little bit of a, peep show might sound archaic, too, but it was a way for men to look at women's bodies with a little bit of clothing on and see something that they'd never seen before.
Well, that's true. That was at a time when even to show your ankle was considered scandalous.
Yeah.
But you have a story in here about a young woman, and it's a true story. And it is about Nora Hildebrandt, and you've got Irene Woodward, but you say... And both of these women were tattooed quite extensively, but you said that the stories that they told probably were based on the true story of a woman by the name of Olive Oatman.
Mm. Yeah, it's supposedly kidnapped and held by Indians, and I guess tortured is part of the inclination here is that they were scarred for life by the Mojave tribe. And then rescued later in life.
And they don't know that the stories that these two women, they suspect that they were copying Olive, but Olive, she was a beautiful young woman, the photograph that was taken of her, and her chin was all tattooed. And she had been a part of the Mojave Indian tribe, and that was part of what they did, and she didn't really want to leave them. But she was taken and brought back into what would have been described as her
civilization. She was happy where she was.
She really was. And again, she's just beautiful. See, often you have tidbits of history that's scattered all through the book, along with this phenomenal.
Well, we truthfully hope that there's something for everybody. It's a coffee table style, oversized book, not really meant to be read cover to cover, but, you know, pick it up on any page. Every page has an illustration of some sort on it. See that picture, you know, read that picture's caption, and then sort of get into the body of the text.
How long does it take you to bring these thousands of points of information together? These books are just amazing.
Well, each book has roughly 1,000 stories and 500 photographs.
Wow.
And we start work on the next year's before this year's comes out. So typically each book is the best of a one-year period from, like, March to March. So this is March 2010 to about March 2011. And we look at maybe as many as 10,000 stories to come down to 1,000. You know?
Amazing. Now, how many people are on staff? That's a lot of material to review. How many people do you have doing this?
Well, we've got a great staff. We have some people here in Orlando, and I guess typically there's about 5 of us that have something to do with the book here, 1, 2, 3, maybe call it 6, and then there's about 10 over in London. The book is actually put together in London, England, which is our publishing office.
You have one photo.
And they do a great job.
Yes, they really do. You have a photo here of what you call the Spider City, and it's a 600-foot-long web that appeared over the course of 2 weeks along the banks of a lake in a Texas state park. I mean, most of us, when we walk into a spider web, that's enough to give you willies because it's a phenomenally strong material. But 600 feet of web, is this a one-time occurrence, or is this something that happens occasionally? And do they know very much about why it does happen?
Well, I guess I'd say occasionally. It's pretty darn rare. But this is something that has happened in a couple other places, and it usually happens very quickly. You go to bed tonight and wake up tomorrow, and your town's covered in spider webs. But, you know, it's an insect infestation, obviously, and, I don't know, it looks like something out of a horror movie, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
You know, cobwebs everywhere. But there's been a few episodes of this. This isn't a one-time deal, so it's just the question of a bunch of spiders all in the same place at the same time under the same conditions, and then go to it. But, you know, what isn't as frightening about this is that you can clearly see it. You know, most people are scared of spider webs when they walk into it and they didn't see it there, but this you couldn't miss.
Yes, it's just amazing. It's this grayish color.
600 feet long.
That is just incredible. Now let's go to a remote desert in Turkmenistan and talk about the fire in the hole. These photographs of this, and I'll use the same words but arrange them differently, of a hole filled with flames and hot lava. It's 200 feet wide, and this was created when a sinkhole collapsed. This photography is just amazing.
Well, I'll assume most of our audience knows what a sinkhole is, but, you know, it's created by water underground rotting away or eating away at the limestone until a hole is formed and the earth literally caves in. It's relatively common here in Central Florida, and it can be very scary. It happens quickly, and, you know, one day your house is fine, the next day your house has fallen into a big pit. But in this case, it's deep enough, 200 feet wide and 65 feet deep, that it went into lava, and it looks like a pit from hell. You know, the fire and lava is right there staring you in the face in the middle of a desert. You know, it's like there's no landscape. You're flat for the as far as the eye can see, and then all of a sudden a big hole.
And I know part of the story is that some miners started a fire to burn off the gas because this sinkhole collapsed underneath a gas mining rig. And this happened in 1971.
And it's still burning.
It's still burning in the lava.
40 years later.
Mm-hmm. Incredible. Well, one of the areas, I'm a real animal fan, and I thought these photos about the pet dogs at the Dahi Pet Civilization Park in China and what they did with them to disguise them as wild animals is phenomenal. The artistry here is just beyond imagination. I mean, who would think you could make a golden retriever look like a Bengal tiger?
Or little, well, I don't even know what kind of dog it is, but a little fluffy chow-type dog into panda bears.
And they're adorable.
Yeah, beautifully, you know, I hope to God that the paint isn't toxic, but the paint job is fantastic, and I know I can't get my dog to sit still for a half a second, so I don't know how they do this, but the tiger is phenomenal. I mean, it clearly is a dog. I mean, it's got a dog's nose, but the painted skin pattern looks perfect, that if this thing was, you know, curled up a bit and sitting in the grass, you'd think it was a tiger.
You really would, and the little pandas, the chow chows.
Don't they just look so cute?
They are just adorable, and the way she's holding them is the way they'd hold a panda bear. And the chow is letting her do that. And you've got a picture of the chow that was all
before,
white.
Before and after.
Before and after. It's absolutely amazing. And then one of the things that I thought was absolute, I don't know if most people would be intrigued by this, but I was. You talk about an artist, Marina Malveda. She's from Montreal, and she uses genuine human skulls borrowed from a tribal art collector to cast life-size skulls in chocolate. Oh, jeez.
Well, the collector recently deceased. His name was Bill Jameson. He's quite a famous, almost infamous Torontonian down in Toronto, Canada. And he is one of the world's great collectors of tribal art of all kinds, but especially skulls. And he loaned her a skull from his collection, and she made a perfect replica out of chocolate. And, you know, most of her business is around around Halloween. She's got a chocolate candy with a difference.
That's the truth. My goodness.
You know, we've all got used to eating the ears off a chocolate bunny, but eating the ears off a chocolate human's head is a little different.
Well, apparently it's working for her. And then when I found out, and the photo here is just beyond, so hopefully nobody's having dinner right at this moment, but you have in here a little section called Yucky Food Facts.
Yeah. My least favorite part of the book.
And I can understand why.
Not just at dinner time, but at any time. You know? All right, so let me guess. Are we going to the frog in the soup bowl?
Well, we can do the frog. We can do that one in the soup bowl. But also, what I found amazing is that, and I'm going to quote right from the book, for every 3.5 ounces of product, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration allows a certain amount of alien material before taking action. This includes up to 3 rodent hairs, 60 insect fragments in chocolate, 5 fly eggs, and 1 maggot in tomato juice, and 1 rodent hair, and 30 insect parts in peanut butter. Okay, that really gives me a very good feeling about the Food and Drug Administration.
You sort of don't want to eat it today, do you? That is pretty amazing. You know, all factual backup things, and you do read about this in the hot dog business probably more than any other, but, you know, little bits of bugs in your food is pretty common, and it's hard to believe that somebody gets a job measuring that stuff, but somebody out there says, yeah, you can eat so many bugs, but you can't eat this many, you know.
You have got a story in here about a mystic cat named Oscar.
Well, Oscar lives in a nursing home, and seems to have the uncanny ability of predicting when someone's going to die. And I don't know, it kind of scares me that I don't want Oscar around my bed too much, but Oscar has a habit of, you know, rubbing against the door and purring until you let him in when he thinks someone's going to die, and he gets in the room and he curls up at their feet, and he's been right more often than wrong. And some people find it very comforting. Helps them prepare for death, but other people are trying to lock that cat out.
one of the facts that you have in your book, you have all kinds of different information about animals, but you talk about how in December of 2010, more than 80,000 drumfish were found dead along a 20-mile stretch of the Arkansas River, and 10,000 red drumfish that mysteriously washed up dead in Chesapeake Bay in Maryland. And I thought, whoa, that is something that is quite unusual.
Well, this is one that we have to put in the unexplainable category. No real logic, though there's been a couple stories offered. But there was actually a third bird infestation not too far from the fish one. That something was going on real bad there, and the basic suggestion when you have a rain of fish or a rain of frogs or whatever, is a natural phenomena occurring somewhere close by. You know, a tornado picks them up and blows them, and they all fall down when the tornado stops, sort of thing. But I've heard theories of tornadoes, theories of poison, nothing that you can say that is the reason, but believe it or not, it happened in three different places in a matter of about 1 week apart. A lot of creatures dying.
Wow. Now, another fact that you give out is bacterial rain, and this occurred in the state of Washington, which is where I'm from, Oakville, Washington, and in 1994, you said gelatinous blobs rained down and animals died and people ended up with flu-like symptoms. This was just fascinating. And apparently they researched it because they said the blobs contained human white blood cells and two types of bacteria, one of which is found in our digestive system. But they don't know where they came from.
Just literally falling from the sky.
Fascinating stuff. Fascinating.
Believe it or not.
That is the truth. And what is so much fun with the book, like you said, it's a coffee table book. You can just open it to anywhere, any page, and you're going to have something to share with someone. And what I think is even more fascinating is that if you've got a good memory, you can memorize some of this stuff and throw it out in conversation and blow people's minds. They would have no idea.
Yeah, young boys apparently are very good at that. They tend to read our books cover to cover and memorize the stuff just to turn around and tell someone else. And I guess that's one great form of flattery, that everybody starts talking Ripley's, you know? The book is called Strikingly True, and I'm very proud of it. I think it's one of the best we've ever done, and literally about 1,000 great stories.
Well, it is, and you show so many different things, like a woman that crochets lions. I mean, mm-hmm. Who in the world would do this?
Bigger than life size. The thing's about the size of a school bus, and, it's a beautiful female stalking lion.
Yes, absolutely gorgeous. And then you have the absolutely, it's just an amazing photograph of the solar detector in this book.
Yeah.
And where is this?
Well, give me a second here to get my fingers on that. That's not one I know off the top of my head.
Yeah, it's on 231. And
thank you. Appreciate that.
My pleasure. And you talk about this gigantic...
It's a great picture. It almost looks like an insect's eye, layers and layers and layers of little gold balls. It's in Japan, and it's a half a mile underground, holds 50,000 tons of water, and has 11,146 light detectors.
Mm-hmm. It's an incredible, incredible accomplishment, but my concern, and you have in the photo, this thing is so massive, and at the bottom of the photo is this little rubber raft
with two people in it.
And they look like just itsy-bitsy,
Little ants. And it's funny because most people don't even notice them. They're looking up, the picture's taken from the bottom looking up this big cylinder, and you really almost miss the people altogether. But the people are there for a reason, I guess, and that's to, give you a perspective of just how huge this thing is.
That is amazing. I wonder
136 feet high.
I wonder how it was affected by the earthquake. Or was it a thing?
I don't know the answer to that. I'm going to suggest it wasn't hurt too bad. Japan's, you know, a small country, but the earthquake didn't hit the whole island. And the fact that it's underground, it's probably, certainly saved from the tsunami.
Well, I would like to think so, because this thing is absolutely amazing to look at. And then you also have the story about the Invisible Man. And this is something I think just about everybody has seen movies about the Invisible Man disappearing and this type of thing.
Well, very affected by Harry Potter, the cloak of invisibility.
That's right.
You know, he's designed some high-tech reflective material, made a jacket out of it, I guess, a large shirt, and with video and projecting, it looks like you can see right through him.
It's just incredible, because the photograph that you have here, it's like you are doing exactly that. It's just going...
You're seeing people that are, in fact, in front of him, but they appear to be behind him, you know, as if you've looked right through him.
I find it also, because of living in the Pacific Northwest, where slugs are king, we have a solar slug that you mentioned, and it's a green sea slug. There actually is a slug that lives on solar power, and it takes its energy from algae, which I found very, very interesting. But I think one of the things that is really, well, maybe the topping on the top of our conversation today is about the Skeleton Staff, the post-mortem club that holds its annual breakfast in Chicago. Well, no, this was done in 1934. I beg your pardon. And there was an organization of napropaths. I've never heard that term.
No, me neither. Well, people that, spiritualist, I guess is a good enough word, that believe that you can communicate with the dead, have been around for several hundred years, and, it's a tough one to prove, but there's people that look you in the eye and say, yes, we've contacted the dead, and the evidence is in some, pretty strange pictures, as shown, just a couple pages before that. There's a section on ectoplasma that has mediums with, things growing out of their ears and stuff captured by the camera. And the Postmortem Club, sort of was interested in all things dead.
Well,
it's a cool picture. They're at a banquet with a skeleton, and the skeleton's got a cigarette in his mouth.
Yes.
Very strange
and
photo.
It's just fascinating. The diversity and the absolutely sometimes insane information that you will see here. You go, people really do this? I mean, you've got stuff in here about people and their food contests and what they do and why they do it.
Great escapes, great survivals, people with body modifications, people doing, very strange stunts like going down a waterfall on an air mattress and those strange animals. There's a one of my favorite pictures I thought you might have gone to in the animal section, a bunch of mountain goats on the side of a man-made dam. Apparently they're licking the salt off the stones, but it is virtually a 90-degree perpendicular, and there's it's not just one, there's a whole herd on the side of this dam. I just am baffled. Where was the photographer who took it is almost as amazing as how are those lambs standing up there without falling off the side of the mountain.
It's incredible. Well, Ripley's, as always, is intriguing. You even have Arnold Schwarzenegger in here. I mean, you've got so many different things, Edward, and it's been such a delight. Now, I know Ripley's has its website. Where can people go to find out more? Because you've got a radio program, a television program. What else?
Well, Ripley's.com is one-stop shopping. You can hear what we call our oddcast. We do a weekly radio website-oriented radio show. The new one's posted every Monday on our website. We do a weekly weird newsletter that if you just sign up, it doesn't cost anything, But go to our website and ask for the weekly weird news to be sent to your email. You can find out the four or five weirdest stories every week. We've got a section starring yours truly called Inside the Vault, where I talk about our newest acquisitions in the funny exhibit section. And all our books, not just new ones, strikingly true, but all our books can be bought directly from our website or any Ripley Museum or Amazon.com or wherever fine books are sold. You can find the newest ones, that's for sure.
Well, this one, strikingly true, I can tell you, it gives you a lot to think about, but more than anything else, it reminds you and makes you aware that the world has a lot in it that most of us never see, but Ripley's makes sure that we do. Thanks so much for being with me, Ed. Edward Meyer, Vice President of Exhibits and Archives, and much, much more. He's been with the company for, 36 years?
Almost 34.
Almost 34 years. 34 years. It's just incredible, and he'll never, ever be bored. This is Donna Sebo. Thank you, Edward, again for being with us. Donna Sebo here, broadcasting from Fairbanks, Alaska. We'll be back in just a moment.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna broadcasting from Fairbanks, Alaska, where it is a balmy 23 degrees, and it probably is going to even drop as it starts going into the darker hours. But hey, it's that time of the year, and I'll tell you what, people are hardy up here. Nothing stops them. They go out regardless of weather, and they get things done. Now, I do want to let you know, phone lines are open regardless of where I am. By golly, you can still call in and chat with me. The telephone number to call in if you'd like to get a reading from me on the air is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And all I need from you is your first name or your initial. And, of course, I love to know where you're calling in from. Now, I do want to mention a class for those of you in Western Washington, Quantum Mind. Now, this is a workshop that I and Robert Newman are putting together. It's going to be taking place on Saturday, November the 12th. It's at Bridgeport Place, 5250 Bridgeport Way West. The time will be on that Saturday, November the 12th, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. And this is a workshop about empowering you and your life on multiple levels. One, I'll be talking specifically about how to develop and accentuate your intuitive skills. And then Robert Newman, who is a feng shui specialist, he is going to be telling you how you can create a physical environment of harmony to support whatever your deepest desires might be and encourage success. So the two of us will be presenting this class. Refreshments are going to be served. The admission cost is $39.95 prepaid or $45 at the door. And if you'd like more information, contact me at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604. Or you can email me, Donna@DelphiInternational.com. That's Donna@DelphiInternational.com. We can only have 25 people in this class because we want to be able to give personal interaction with you and for you. So just let us know. November the 12th, Saturday, is going to be a dynamic event. 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. It's a great way to work towards the objectives that you want to achieve. And I want to thank so many of the people that I interacted with in New York City. When I was there last week, it just seems like yesterday. It was a wonderful experience, and New York City is a very special place, and I had to chuckle because today, here in Fairbanks, I had a cab driver who is from New York City, and he was saying how much he loved it, and I asked him how he got back up into Alaska, because apparently he had been here before, and he was because work was available to him, and he couldn't get it in New York. And I wanted to share some information about a group of people in New York called the Boat Lifters. Now, this is a story relating to 9/11. And I have to tell you, I had not had an awareness of this. And one of you in the listening audience sent me this story, and I honestly do not have that person's name in front of me. But I want to say that this story is so special because it talks about how people can respond to situations. And there was so little known about this situation. And here is, it was written by a Catherine Harrop, and she said, there's a band of boats that came together to rescue nearly 500,000 New Yorkers from the World Trade Center site on the day that the towers collapsed. Now, it's the largest boat lift ever to have happened. It was greater than the one at Dunkirk during World War II. And Catherine said, a story of such a large scale became lost because of all of the activities that were going on. But a new 10-minute documentary called Boat Lift by Eddie Rosenstein, she said, captures the boat evacuations that happened on 9/11. And it's the first part of four short documentaries that have been created for 9/11. And this is what Tom Hanks said, and he is the narrator of this particular film portion. He said, boats, usually an afterthought in most New Yorkers' minds, were for the first time in over a century the only way in and out of Lower Manhattan. And New Yorkers don't really think of Manhattan as an island, since everything from the basics to beyond your wildest imagination is available. So they don't think of themselves as really being on an island. But on September the 11th, those that were trapped below the World Trade Center site, who were not able to escape without swimming or being rescued by a boat, were vividly reminded of the fact that they are living on an island. And this is the information that is given in the film. People were actually jumping into the river and swimming out of Manhattan. Boats were nearly running them over, and the captains and crews of the fleet of boats who rescued so many on 9/11 came together with no idea what they were going to be getting into and no idea whether Manhattan would be attacked again, let alone their own boats. And all they knew was that a lot of people, very desperate people, were in need of help, and they were not going to turn their backs on them, even if it meant putting their own lives at risk. And so many people were involved. The New York Waterway, the Coast Guard, ferries, tugboats, private boats, party boats, small professional diving boats, and so many more that nobody will even know about, ferried hundreds of thousands of people to Staten Island, Brooklyn, Upper Manhattan, the Bronx, and Queens in less than 9 hours. Now stop and think about what they accomplished. 500,000 people rescued. And all of the people, the crews, all of them responded to one call that was put out by the U.S. Coast Guard in New York. And there was a Staten Island ferry, James Parises, that said, "I've never seen so many tugboats all at once. I've worked on the water for 28 years. I've never seen that many boats come together at one time that fast. One radio call, and they all came together." And there had been no evacuation plans. Nobody had been trained to respond to this. They did it. And do you know what was basically behind it? They said the ethic code of the seas that made the boat rescues the success that they were. If a boat needed refueling, another one would pull up alongside it and give it 10,000 gallons of fuel. Nobody asked any questions. Nobody asked for money. If a woman in a wheelchair needed to be lifted over a fence on the water's edge to get into one of the boats, there were more than enough hands to help lift her. If people were stranded on a ledge by the water, they'd get picked up by a boat. No one was left behind. It is such a powerful film, and in my next newsletter, I'm going to have the link to this so that you'll be able to see what I saw. This is an incredible demonstration of the courage and the character of what I feel represents the American heart, the American spirit. And so I just felt like I had to share this with you because I think it's a statement about people in general, that if there is a need, they'll rise to it. And so many times through the years, I can remember people saying, "Oh, you go to New York, people are rude, they're blah, blah, blah." There were all of these statements made. Well, I will tell you that in all of my travels to New York, I've encountered a lot of nice people. And I really love the cab drivers. I just think they're fabulous. But one of the things we need to remember is that the real character of people comes out during emergencies. And that one was a super colossal one. So again, I will have the film. There will be a link in my next newsletter that I will be sharing. So if you'd like to get a copy of my newsletter in the future, all you have to do is just send me an email and say, "Donna, add me to your mailing list," and I will do exactly that. Now, I know we're going to be taking a break in just a minute. I want to let you know who's coming on tomorrow. We're going to be talking with Dr. Azarm Gharahman, 6 Life Secrets of Content Women. And then on Friday, we're going to be telling some ghost stories. Jim Harold is going to be my guest, and Jim has a series of campfire stories. It's perfect. That's right. This is a month when ghostly, ghoulish things are meant to be shared. That's just the flavor of fall. This is Donna Sebo broadcasting from Fairbanks, Alaska. I'm going to be taking a break for just a moment. When we come back, have a pad of paper and a pen handy. I've got a wonderful recipe to share with you and some other little tidbits, but if you want me to call or talk to you, give me a buzz at 888-627-6008, and I'll light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. We'll be right back.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedrose accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny that will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com, to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you want to chat, 888-627-6008. Well, breakfast is my favorite meal of the day, and typically on Sundays when I'm not on the road traveling, I will get in the kitchen and I will make up a super spectacular breakfast. It's the type that is, well, it's even better than what you go and you get out in a restaurant. But that's my time when I spend my, well, the morning with my husband, and I like to read to him, and so we just really enjoy it. We get out of our finest stuff, and we make Sunday morning breakfast absolutely awesome. Well, I came across a recipe for French toast, but it's not just French toast. It's a banana breakfast kind of a French toast. And you know, when the weather gets cooler and it's brisk and you want to have something a little bit different, this might be absolutely wonderful, and I think kids would just love it. But it is something you could fix even for a brunch, and it's relatively easy. So this is what you're going to need. You're going to need two bananas, and you have them crosswise, and then you have them lengthwise. And you're going to need four slices of whole wheat or multigrain bread or whatever your favorite bread is. If you have a particular white bread, use it. Whatever you enjoy. You're going to need two large eggs. You're going to need a half a cup of milk. I prefer using a cream. Heck, if you're going to have French toast, make it good. But use what you want. A half a cup of milk or cream, a half a teaspoon of vanilla extract, a half a teaspoon of ground cinnamon, a pinch of salt. You're going to need a tablespoon of unsalted butter and two tablespoons of honey. Again, like I said, I really think kids are going to like this, but it's something different. Now, what you want to do, you want to arrange your banana slices in a single layer on two slices of bread, and then you top it with the other pieces of bread. In a bowl, you want to take your eggs, your milk, your vanilla, cinnamon, and salt, and just whisk it. It's going to take you just less than 30 seconds to whisk it together. And what you do, you soak each sandwich in egg mixture for a minute or two, or until the bread is saturated. Now, you take your butter, put it in a skillet over medium heat, place your sandwiches in a skillet, cook until the bottoms are golden, about 2-3 minutes, and then flip them over. And you, when you flip it over, you want to put a pan that is heavier on the sandwiches to press them down. Or if you have something like a panini type of a cooker or something of that style where you can put them on that, then it'll cook until it's crisp and golden. And, you know, it's a serving for two, but you could make this even better. You could use sometimes a little bit of peanut butter in there if you wanted to. Your imagination is unlimited. But what I like to do with French toast, especially when I'm doing something like this and my schedule is busy, I like to prepare it the night before. Pour the egg mixture over this, flip it one time, flip the bread over, the sandwiches over, and then cover it with saran wrap and let it sit in the refrigerator overnight. And you can absolutely be assured that when you get up in the morning and you're ready to prepare this, it's going to be already nicely soaked, and then you will be able to fix the French toast with bananas. But you can use your imagination and try all other kinds of fillings, whatever is your preference. If you don't like bananas, you could use peaches. You want to make sure they're well-drained. But you can do all kinds of things with this. And a little bit of cream cheese. You could add some cream cheese in there, and that would add another level of flavor. Whatever is your pleasure. But this is something you can double the recipe, you can triple the recipe. But again, I like to suggest that you consider soaking it overnight so that the egg mixture is in the bread. It really does make a difference, and it's so time handy. when you're fixing bacon or whatever else you've got, or for the morning breakfast with you and your family, it's a great thing to do, but it's perfect for cold weather. And it's going to be absolutely deliciously flavorful. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-627-6008. Well, the other day I was talking to you about how in New York smartphones are being stolen. Well, it's not just in New York. That was just information that I learned about while I was there. But this is happening all over the country. Now, you need to understand that if you lose your phone, all isn't lost, at least if you first downloaded a phone tracking app that uses GPS technology. It enables you to get your phone back in a snap. Now, if you have an iPhone, you can set up and turn on the free Find My iPhone app, which allows you to see the location of your lost phone on a map from your own computer. You have an Android, you can download their free Prey app, a BlackBerry. Use the free BlackBerry Protect app. Windows mobile users can download the free Lookout Mobile Security program. And there is a suggestion that you can use a photo of your pet or kids as your phone's lockout screen or wallpaper. What they have found in a recent study is that people were much more likely to return an object displaying personal photos because they feel like, gee whiz, this belongs to somebody. They need to have it back. And I wanted to give you a little bit more trivia. About 140,000 cell phones are left on Southwest flights each year. 50,000 cell phones in enterprise rent-a-cars and 120,000 cell phones in Chicago taxicabs. Amazing. I think it's because they're so small. And we just don't think about it until, oops, I think I put it down on the seat or I did something. Also, when it comes to your animals, this is just a suggestion. If you put a collar with ID tags on your cat or dog, sometimes the pet slips out. We had a neighbor that had gotten this adorable pink collar for their kitten. One day, it was a week after I first saw the kitten, the collar was off of the kitten, and it was laying on a rock by the street side. So what you want to do for about $10, a vet or an animal care facility can implant a transponder containing your contact information under your pet's skin. It takes just seconds. If your pet gets lost, a vet or shelter can find you using their wand that they have that checks the data on the microchip. And that won't come off, and it'll be with your pet for as long as it lives. Also, because chips and ID tags only work if someone finds your pet, you can also attach a ZoomPak GPS locator to your pet's collar. Then, even if your pet won't let strangers approach and they're lost in an area, you might be able to locate your animal via computer. Now, you can go to ZoomPak. The device is, I think, about $99. It's ZoomPak or Bake, excuse me, ZoomBak.com, and you can check out Radio Shack and Pep Boys for more information on this. And then your digital camera. Wow. If you will look for your camera serial number, it's located on the bottom, write it down, put it someplace safe, then if it ever gets lost or stolen, you can go to GadgetTrack.com. GadgetTrack.com, and type the number into the camera serial number search field. And since most digital cameras have their serial number in each picture, the program will search the internet for photos from your camera. Maybe somebody's posted them on Facebook or a Flickr account, and you'll be able to find your camera. Would you believe that that's possible? Well, you can check it out. Also, you might want to take a photo of yourself holding a sign with your email address or phone number on it. And this tip comes from a loss prevention expert, Himu Nigam. And then save it as the first photo that comes up when the camera's turned on. He said lots of times cameras are not returned simply because there's no identifying information on them. But this way, when your camera turns on, your contact information will automatically pop up. So those are just a few tips for you regarding your electronic equipment and how you can safeguard, perhaps even find it, and also with a pet. I can tell you just in the last 2 weeks, I've talked to three different people whose animals have disappeared. And I know sometimes when animals like cats have been house cats and suddenly they're outside, it can cause a disorientation with them. They can become very frightened and they just take off. They don't know where they are. And if there's another critter out in the environment, they can get very, very scared. And then dogs, they just get curious. They just go off and wander. So this gives you something that you can work with that enables you to perhaps locate a loved animal that you would not want anything to happen to. And sometimes callers, there are people that will just pick up animals, especially little dogs, and they just love them, and they'll just pick them up, and they may even remove their collar. That's not a very pleasant thing to hear, but that can happen. So there's just these little tips sometimes can maybe enable you or someone that you know keep in touch with their electronic gear and, again, animals. Well, I know that we're just about out of time here. I'm up here in Alaska. Tomorrow I'll be broadcasting from Fairbanks, but I also will be in Anchorage on Friday, so we'll be able to have the show from there. And I want you to remember, you're always the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. And don't forget about that November 12th class. If you're listening to me and you're in Western Washington, hey, come on down and be a part of this class. It's dynamic. Just give me a buzz if you want more information. 253-582-5604. Donna Sebo here. Bye for now. Talk to you tomorrow. Same time, same place. Bye-bye.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.